Chris Garlock here with this week's Labor History Today. Our theme this week could be summed up as the more things change, the more they remain the same. The occasion of the 164th anniversary of the birth of Eugene Debs is a starting point for our interview this week with historian Leon Fink. Born on November 5, 1855, Debs was for many years the most famous socialist in America, running for president of the United States 5 times. He received nearly 1 million votes in the 1920 campaign, which is remarkable, not just because he was a socialist, but because Debs was at the time a federal prisoner in jail for sedition and not actually eligible to be president, though he did promise to pardon himself if elected. In 2016, another presidential candidate became the most well-known socialist in America when Bernie Sanders ran, going on to win 23 primaries and caucuses and approximately 43% of pledged delegates before conceding to Hillary Clinton. Bernie's running for president again, and Labor History Today's Patrick Dixon sat down with Leon to talk about Debs, Sanders, and the current state of socialism in America. On this week's Cool Things from the Meanie Archive, recorded last month during Pride Month, Alan Weirdak and Chloe Daniel explore a document from 2 decades ago that links the newly formed Pride at Work with a push to include alternative medicine in Medicare for All legislation. The International Labor Organization, or ILO, is celebrating its centenary this year, and the Kalmanovitz Initiative, which co-sponsors Labor History Today, is hosting a conference, Continuing the Struggle, the International Labor Organization's Centenary and the Future of Global Worker Rights, on November 21st and 22nd at Georgetown University. The ILO is a United Nations agency whose mandate is to advance social justice and promote decent work by setting international labor standards. I'll be interviewing conference planning committee members Tula Connell and Mark Anner on my Your Rights at Work show on WPFW 89.3 FM this Thursday, November 14th at 1 p.m. If you miss the live broadcast, we'll try to get a special LHT podcast out later this week. Patrick Dixon will also have an interview with conference planning committee members Eileen Boris and Jill Jensen in an upcoming Labor History Today podcast, so keep an ear out for that. All right, here's the show.
Hi, Leon. So thanks for joining us again. Bernie Sanders runs as a socialist. His policies seem, for many, fairly indistinguishable from those of Elizabeth Warren, and yet she asserts that she's a capitalist. Meanwhile, the Republicans claim they're all socialists. So how should we make sense of this?
Well, Patrick, I think raised a good question about, partly comes down to what do we mean by socialism in the year 2020. Come back to Debs. Debs not only was a kind of cutting edge political figure, but he was also very much an American icon, a kind of a favorite son of my favorite state, Indiana. Grew up in as a railroad fireman in Terre Haute, Indiana. Served as an officer in a very conservative craft union for years. Ultimately led a revolt against both narrow craft unionism as well as the kind of monopolist railroad interest of his day in a series of strikes that culminated in his leadership of the American Railway Union, the industrial union, and that led to the great Pullman strike and boycott of 1894. It was only after that that he, after a stint in jail following the Pullman strike, declared himself a socialist. He had been supposedly smuggled a some Marxist text in jail by Victor Berger, the socialist leader from Milwaukee. Legend had it that he then proclaimed himself a socialist as he emerged from jail. One problem with that story is that it took him a couple of years before he helped to organize what became the Socialist Party. And in those couple of years, rather than opting for any kind of socialist political program, he opted for a cooperative colony, took himself out to Colorado for a couple of years. So it seemed like he had other visions in mind other than any kind of even German-rooted social democratic vision, which ultimately did become the vision of the American Socialist Party. Come back to the political tradition that you emphasized, that ultimately Bernie Sanders connects to. I think in the Debs era, Debs, who ran for president four times, saw socialist influence build, especially in cities and among discrete ethnic groups, until World War I, when the very principles of the Socialist Party and standing up against the war, the only national party that did that, undid their strength and left them a weak vestige of their pre-war self by the 1920s. By the time of Bernie Sanders' rise to political maturity, socialism as a political force in this country had all but disappeared. I would say it existed on the margins of other social movements. People like both Norman Thomas, A. Philip Randolph had played important roles in the early civil rights movement. Socialists were certainly active in the international solidarity campaigns against American intervention in Vietnam and Central America. They were active in all the new social movements, but it'd be hard to identify any influential socialist vision, I think, acting on its own. So Sanders comes along, I think, in an important period, a kind of shake-up period of American capitalism, just as the early Socialist Party could be seen as a response to the Gilded Age and the vast inequalities that shook Americans' confidence in the system. And at the turn of the century, so by the end of the 20th century, and especially after the financial collapse of 2008, many Americans had lost confidence in a corporate-dominated political and industrial world.
So historically, many socialists derived that political understanding from a Marxist understanding of history or of society. Was that the case with Debs? And is the Sanders form of socialism completely stripped of any Marxism at this point?
I think that it was the case with Debs, although I think the Debsian radicalism was in reflected with an earlier American strand of populism, anti-monopoly fervor, the social movements that give rise to the American Railway Union had been influenced by movements like the Knights of Labor and other very more indigenous American working class movements. But Debs advocated, as did the European socialists, for nationalization of the instrument of the main instruments of production, basically saw a revolution in ownership of the economy taking place after a political victory at the ballot box. By the time of Sanders, even in socialist circles, where socialism remained a force, namely Europe, that vision had long dissipated, and the socialists who were heirs to the Marxist tradition of class struggle had largely given up that the old means in favor of a more reformist evolutionary path, and even imagined less a total transformation, revolution of the economy than more of a reform capitalism. This was heralded by the so-called Bad-Godesberg program in 1959 in Germany, where the German Social Democrats, the strongest party in Europe, basically renounced any plans for either class conflict or nationalization in favor of a broader egalitarian social welfare program, including co-determination or worker participation in industry alongside their capitalist bosses. And so by the time Sanders comes along, it's a good question, what's the vision that Sanders socialism represents? I think there's still something not just exotic but appealing, for especially for young people and for American self-declared defined radicals, in the notion of the political revolution that Sanders talks about. But really his tradition, the notion of revolution, is it's not the old Marxian revolution, at least it hadn't been for decades. And instead, when Sanders himself is pressed on the matter of what he means by his socialism, he's inclined not to go back to Debs, let alone the earlier revolutionary socialist of the 1848 variety. Instead, he turns to the New Deal and sees himself as the continuation of the New Deal revisited or expanded upon. So he goes back to the New Deal liberal tradition to expand on that. So you could say in the end, how does this socialism different from Elizabeth Warren's so-called democratic capitalism? And when you get down to issue by issue, nitty-gritty details of what their program would be, I don't see a great deal of difference.
Thanks for joining us again. I'm sure we'll catch up with you again at some point before this election's over.
Sure thing.
On this week's Cool Things from the Meanie Archive, recorded last month during Pride Month, Alan Weirdak and Chloe Daniel explore a document from two decades ago that links the newly formed Pride at Work with a push to include alternative medicine in Medicare for All legislation.
Hello, everyone. We're here with another session of Cool Things in the Meanie Archives. I'm Archive Specialist Alan Weirdak here with our Student Assistant Chloe Daniel. And today, again, we are looking at the Pride at Work collection, kind of celebrating Pride Month. But actually, this document that we found kind of ties in not only with Pride Month, but also with universal health care. Full disclosure, this segment is recorded one day after the hearings have begun on the Medicare for All. So I think that this is especially relevant. So Chloe, what do we have here today?
So this folder is about legislation in San Francisco that is pushing for Chinese medicine to be included as part of healthcare. So it talks about a need for like this sort of balanced and holistic approach between Western medicine, which often focuses on treating things as they happen, but also Chinese medicine, which is a lot more dealing with prevention, and how these two things working together just make a lot more holistic and healthier people. So it also sort of emphasizes the fact that when you're dealing with prevention, it could sort of reduce costs later on because people don't need to access some treatments if they have if they're able to treat them right away, basically.
And the labor element of this is that the proposal was actually written by George Wettermeyer, who was the healthcare reform coordinator for the AFGE in San Francisco, the proposal is widely supported by organized labor. Who are some of the supporters?
So we have a good list. So the San Francisco Labor Council, which is associated with the AFL-CIO, the SEIU, Healthcare Workers Union Local 250. So we have also some textile workers, AFGE, Sailors Union of the Pacific, But also we have some groups, more like Asian American specific groups. So the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance, which is associated with the AFL-CIO, but also the Asian Law Caucus, a variety of like Chinese medical, Chinese medicine centers. But also you see ACT UP, which is, they were instrumental in, fighting against the AIDS crisis. And, it's specifically the Golden Gate chapter of ACT UP has a letter of support along with the unions and some of these Asian American groups.
And this proposal, I believe, it's proposing for legislation to be enacted at the beginning of 2000. So I'm assuming that it was written in 1999, which is about 5 years after Pride at Work was founded. So it's really interesting to see some of the issues that they were getting in not long after their formation. And then some of these letters, the supporting letters after the proposal, there's quite a list of supporting letters, and some of them are really poignant. And one of the biggest themes from them is it talks about the health of the city. It talks about the health and the well-being of the entire city. More than one letter references this. I don't know. Can you do you have a favorite quote or anything like that? Do you want to?
Yeah. So this one quote from Jack Cunningham, president of the American Federation of Government Employees in San Francisco, says, "Your union brothers and sisters continue to endorse your work in integrative medicine. Since acupuncture was recognized and endorsed by the National Institute of Health, I see no reason why the board should not pass the legislation you propose. Such action would have far-reaching effects, not only on the health of the HIV community, but on the health of the entire city." So that's another theme you see a lot here, especially sort of coming off the tails of the AIDS crisis. A lot of people have specific medical needs, and something like acupuncture can be very beneficial to sort of staving off some of the symptoms and improving quality of life overall. Also mentioned are like cancer patients who would benefit from this, as well as people who suffer from chronic pain, which is often can be a result of labor. So the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance specifically talks about the fact that a lot of their members are Asian American and already are using these like techniques and types of medicine. So a quote from Beverly Umahara, the president of the APALA in San Francisco, says, "Asian communities have used and relied upon these expensive medicines not merely as alternative medicine, but often as the primary method of curing illness. Unfortunately, we've had to pay out of pocket." That's interesting because people have already been using these services, but the healthcare system has not caught up to them yet. And they're having to pay out of pocket for things that could easily be covered by their unions and their health insurance.
Absolutely. The one thing that I think is really, really resonates with me is kind of how it speaks to this like broader solidarity, not just with like Medicare for All, but what it shows is kind of like the effort and support that it takes in organizing for these kinds of efforts to actually push this legislation, you know, pushing, you know, for workers to come together and push this kind of legislation. It is possible. It's, you know, see a really tangible piece of legislation with these letters of support really shows that it's something that just any member of the working class can just work together and just push for. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think specifically expanding sort of what healthcare means, what it means to be a healthy person, and sort of adding the element of like mental health to this sort of, especially with relation to Pride Month, kind of paves the way for more trans-specific healthcare. So a lot of things like a lot of gender-affirming surgeries are not covered by insurance, but they really are necessary. And this has not, the attitude of the public has not really caught up to the health insurance companies. So having these types of surgeries covered by insurance is definitely a sort of, you can see it along the trajectory of what's talked about in these papers.
And just how the health and the well-being of the working class is what is really the health and the well-being of the entire city. So we're going to close with that. This has been another session of Cool Things in the Media Archives. I'm the archive specialist, Alan Weirdak, here with our student assistant, Chloe Daniel. And till next time.
All I hear is a lot of rhetoric, a bunch of sellouts still trying to be the president, lining up their pockets with their Wall Street money. Now they trying to throw dirt until we all get muddy. But I'ma make them quack, make them squeal rubber ducky. In 2016, you Bernie haters got lucky. Now it's almost almost 2020. It's about to get ugly. I'm gonna knock on every door and I don't care who gonna judge me now.
That's it for this week's edition of Labor History Today. You can subscribe to LHC on your favorite podcast app. Today's music included one of Bernie Sanders' official campaign theme songs from 2016 at the top of the show, and playing now a 2020 version by Tony Tigg. Labor History Today is produced by the Metro Washington Council's Union City Radio and the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. The Labor History Today team includes Ben Blake, Chloe Daniel, Patrick Dixon, Leon Finch, Sherry Lincoln, Joe McCartan, and Alan Weirdak. For Labor History Today, this has been Chris Garlock. Thanks for listening. Keep making history, and see you next time.
$27 and they still getting mad. So progressive, and we never gonna let up. Burn the establishment, I'm screaming from the neck up. This is our time, this is our fight. These are my kids, this is my life. This ain't about the left, this ain't about the right. Nobody cares if your MAGA hat's on tight. Your little baby still yelling for the wall seal, while the poor still trying to pay their light bill. 40 hours got them begging for a living wage. Vietnam vets still trying to see a better day. Instead of crying in the ocean full of misery, we gon' stand tall with the burn, making history.